saying you're stupid. You've got Alan Greenspan's policies, right? That's why it's anti-Alan Greenspan's policies.
This attempt to create, you know, we're dealing with, everyone admits we have a complex dynamic system, right? If you can't agree on anything else, we agree on that. And maybe our ability to impose a false stability on that is greater than our ability to understand the system itself. So we say here, you know, we can adjust interest rates or change monetary policy to try to smooth things out. Well, that's exactly the wrong thing. And the analogy that I brought up was that in biosphere 2, all the trees got very brittle and fell apart because there's no wind. Right, and in nature, trees have to have some wind in order to be robust. You know, we do controlled burns. We have, you know, at every ski park, you have the Avalanche Canyon. Same thing.
Or equivalently, we're really good at making sterile environments in hospitals where people are not exposed to a lot of germs, but every now and then you do get some really big thing that we can't cope with, like some strain of staph that's, you know, antibiotic resistant, that then comes along and knocks everyone out.
So two things. One, the metaphor you might be looking for what why is controlled burn.
Right.
Did somebody already say that?
Yeah.
All right. And you're also, I think, essentially building from the model of sexual selection that I presented yesterday.
Robustness versus efficiency.
Right. Similar idea of robustness versus efficiency, where a female can act as a tensioner, exerting a force so that fragility does not arise. So,
hey, can I ask a question? After the aliens left, did they leave Alan here or take him with them?
He was the alien.
That might be an indicator.
This is very much like CS Lowell did in, we were talking about before, in ecology. And what's particularly significant from that work in terms of trade-off between efficiency and robustness is that it points out specific things like connectivity actually ends up being really bad, as does providing the kinds of information that let subsystems cycle in tune with each other. So some of the very things you might do to fix the problem in terms of getting more information under this paradigm actually makes the systems align in ways that lets everyone see, oh, we're going up now, and then lets everyone see we're going down now. And so then instead of it essentially shrinks that distressed economy period.
Right.
So transparency is a bad thing, actually. Transparency into when the Fed's going to make a particular move is actually a bad thing because it blinds everyone.
It can lead to increased connectivity in ways that may actually increase oscillations.
Yeah, and in fact, one idea that also came up during discussion was that there should be some sort of restrictions on how much connectivity subsectors of the economy can have, depending on how deep they are. So that you have some kind of mechanism that way where you don't get like an avalanche where some shock goes through one part and it propagates through the rest.
It's a type of connectivity, not just the
Yes. It's not simply the
usual
the amount of connectivity.
Comparison
but also
between
the
small world.
It's like criticism of fiat currency to me.
It might well be. Like I said, this is just a first step. And there was another idea which came, which is kind of one of my pet ideas, which I think is worth looking at in some way, which is the idea that there are now two economies forming. One is a scarcity-based economy which deals with scarce resources like land, food, time, and so on, which we've had for a very long time. And we have a new economy which is developing, which is based on non-scarce resources, which are the ones that can be infinitely replicated, such as software or, you know, information in a book or whatever. And because you have to spend time, effort on developing software or writing music or whatever, the post-scarcity economy inherits aspects of the scarcity economy. So I would find it interesting, personally me, to see if there's some sort of simulation that people maybe with something like the particle model or one of these models could do to see whether there's a balance point at which the benefits of having freely available resources produced from the post-scarcity economy outweigh the loss of profit made by people who produce those post-scarcity resources. So for instance, somebody who produces a book of information saying, you know, these foods are bad for you, right, gets paid for making that book. Is there some balance point at which the reduction in the medical costs for people going to hospital because they've got, you know, lousy nutrition and the amount of money that the person makes by writing this book and selling it balance out so that you're better off actually selling that information completely free for the good of society rather than paying this person?
Actually, it seems like those costs are kind of incomparable because one of them when you're paying for the cost of a book like that, you're just transferring the wealth to the author. Right? It's just a question of almost accounting within the society. Whereas by providing it for free, you're preventing real cost to the economy of people getting sick.
Right.
So it seems like it's not really a trade-off.
I mean, this is the heart of the patent system analysis. And the problem is I'm not going to write the book if I don't get any money. And so, and I think it's correct to think about better ways to deal with this this issue. There is a big debate over whether we've got too far with patent system things. The whole intellectual property rights, because Americans have a big stake in these patents, and we want the Chinese and other countries, has been harmful in some sense. The Chinese may just copy the things no matter what. Microsoft, presumably cannot do too much with the Chinese copying all their programs and all the CDs and so on. And we understand the Chinese are better off, but that does reduce some of the incentive to the author to make the product.
Yeah. Think about the downloading of music and
It's a giant
music industry.
This is a very big discussion that does not have a reasonable answer yet.
Yeah. the question of incentives is a big one. And the question of how do you, and this is another thing that came up, in the alien context, you could imagine that there were all sorts of different types of incentive that aliens might go on depending on their biology. In the context of humans, you could imagine having an incentive system based on competing for, rather than competing for a flashy car as a status symbol, competing for recognition of being the best hunter in the village or the best artist or whatever. So there's a whole sort of extra realm of incentive systems.
Newspapers are going to collapse and blogsters are not going to do the in-depth reporting that reporters used to do for newspapers.
You might think about unbundling the evil profit word into a little more useful concepts. In biology, a cell has to stay at the same temperature, like we do, and mobilize energy efficiently. And if we take in a little too much, we can store the fat and use it back around. But it needs to put back what it didn't use efficiently. And in an economy where we create the cycles artificially with money in each of the little sub things, you run into problems. But the problem is you need a transform arrow that goes back. We get a little bit of that in recycling. And you need to capture the problems they aren't dealing with, like carbon emissions, by getting them into the economy so they get measured, so the incentives run back. So it's not so much that a polar bear stores a little fat for the winter that is we got from successive profits that's evil. It's that we get this thing all mixed up when the whole system is out of balance and we don't have transforms going back through those cycles. You might take profit and think about it in the context of Morrowind cycles.
I think these things have I like both issues, but for the second issue, I don't understand the distinction between the scarcity economy and the non-scarcity economy. I mean, there's nothing more scarce than a good work of art or a well-written book compared to all the other books.
But once it's created. Inexhaustibility and excludability is the twin requirements of a public good.
Right.
There are plenty of, a piece of art can be excluded. A poem is hard to exclude people from once you have the ability to easily distribute it.
Okay.
And so the key question is what to do with those twin criteria. I was more interested in your first question, and actually a question came from Barclay, you might be helpful here. If you think about the number of ways that human beings enjoy disutility, shame, humiliation, fear, clearly nature is selected for plenty of different nuanced ways to make us unhappy. What is the most commonly accepted theory of disutility within mainstream economics, thinking that all of these things help us in terms of ultimate rather than proximate goals?
My work. Working.
Oh,
it is.
work is considered.
No, it's a labor leisure trade off. I mean,
but work is considered just utility.
Well,
so leisure.
You have the whole behavioral, some of us were talking about this before, you have this whole behavioral economics thing where, for example, this is sort of Robert Trimmer's kind of stuff. We have the old minute game experiment, which is considered to be a big violation of standard economic theory. What the old minute game experiment shows is that people are willing to bear a cost to punish other people if those other people are behaving in ways that they think are unfair or unreasonable. And that, you know, that is something that has almost certainly evolved, hardwired in as part of how did we ever get group formation. It's a very, very high, hard issue. How did you get groups, you know, this is back with our hunter-gatherer ancestry, which we evolved into. You know, we groups organize themselves. How do you get these groups to organize themselves? And a lot of it is, you know, somebody violates the norms of the group and you know, people punish them. And that's going to be very, very important in evolution. So that's not fun. I mean, that's addition to it. So certain kinds of disability are things that we need to help us survive and reproduce, in effect.
But he asked what was the main within its regular standard, and I say labor. Labor and leisure trade, standard story is that labor is unpleasant, and this utility problem. So, I mean, you're sitting next to the guy. Everybody here, you guys are miserable.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the best measure, but that's what
in standard utility, that's the only thing that you put in there that's got the negative utility.
That all the other good. Labor is turning the leaf.
I mean, trade on how do we control.
Labor is turning the leaf.
We control burn idea. We work so we control avalanche. I understand.
That's standard economics.
Clear out the area. That's great. But maybe the forestry specialists can help me. Even the control burn is controversial. If you have residential areas around and commercial areas, the people around do not accept the risk of the control burn, and in turn create a much greater risk, and that's already a problem. Now I'm trying to think how to do that with the financial market. So the physicists would be familiar with Maxwell's demon letting particles go under certain criteria. Naughty particles. So maybe we could call this the, I don't know, the Mings demon or the Keynes demon that would go around and in a controlled fashion create small economic...
good luck with that, I mean, that demon would be sharp.
Almost instantly.
No, the question is: is there a regime of stability that's worthwhile to shoot for? That's maybe smaller than what we currently attempt to go for, because clearly our current attempts at maintaining stability or stabilizing the economy have kind of failed disastrously every now and then, right? And so maybe if we set our sights somewhere a little bit lower, that yes, a house every now and then will get burned. I mean, a controlled burn does destroy trees, right? But the point is that there is some level to which, you know, our attempts to regulate are beyond our means to prognosticate, right? And so this is a dynamic system. This is a dynamic system, and we appreciate that most dynamic systems that we see in the real world have these sorts of not stress tests, but really they have a certain level of you know, kind of self-correction. You can try to build a completely fireproof suburb if you want to, but every now and not build out fire department. Every now and then, you get a very disastrous burn.
But then it again goes to what we were discussing in our selectors thing, that you really need to do that based on what behavioral finance tells you that agents, real agents, react, and try to build in incentives and
Well, one way to think about this is that you're, by introducing shocks or something, basically creating the environment which incentivizes the agents to collaborate to create structures that are resistant to such shocks.
Can I cut this off here? I think we should have a break before
dinner.
Let's not overconnect ourselves, okay?
I'm happy not to say anything. I think this has been great. Thank you. So I think we should break. We have dinner. Tomorrow morning, not all of us, but most of us are still here tomorrow morning. So I think what I want to do and what we should all, those of us who will be here, and we're back here again at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, I think we should think of what we can do with half a day that will be really exciting and really challenging. Because, yeah. We have for most of us half a day. We've had a lot of interesting discussions, a lot of interesting background, a lot of interesting issues. Now let's come back with a lot of energy and try all together in half a day to do something interesting. And I think let's thank all the